This is Hospitality Help with Cindy Race. In each podcast episode, Cindy shares with you over 40 years of industry experience, from what employers look for to hire that right person, to tips on how to prepare yourself for that job you want in the back or front of the house. So if you want some help, you've come to the right place. Hospitality Help. The offer. And I think we're going to explore the two sides of the offer. One who's doing the offer, as well as the one who's going to accept that offer. Once again, Cindy, hello.
Howdy.
How you doing? Let's explore what is exactly the offer. What is an offer for those that don't even know what it is?
So a lot of times back in the day in the restaurant business, if you were a sous chef looking to, get hired on at a new restaurant, the chef would, make you a verbal offer. Hey, we'd like to bring you on, here's what we can pay you type of thing. Mm-hmm. Certainly that is an antiquated approach to signing on the dotted line, right?
I mean, which still happens, though, right?
Oh, for sure.
I've heard a lot of offers, been given a lot of verbal offers.
That's not the best approach. I mean, I think getting a written offer is professional. And, I mean, fortunately, I see a big turn in that direction where even smaller, restaurants, hospitality entities are making the effort to put things in writing. I think it just maps out clear expectations on both sides of the equation so that there's not ambiguity down the road,
So it's not necessarily job description.
No, not at all.
It's
compensation, benefits, what's included in your package.
Okay.
All right. One thing I think is important is let's talk about, what happens at the end of the interview process. It looks like you're getting close. You as the applicant, you're thinking, gee, I like this place. I want to work here. Maybe they've had you in for a working third interview. Sometimes we hear that called a stage.
Right.
And at the end of the stage, the hiring manager may approach you and say, hey, John, this went really well. We'd like to bring you on. We'd like to hire you. Are you expected to say, okay, yes, I'll take the job right then and there? No. I think the appropriate response is something like, thank you so much. That's really exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing your written offer. Thank you. And just leave it there, right?
Now, why go that route? Some people have certain circumstances,
sure,
right? And so it depends on the person, right? But what is the significance of, hold on, I'll get back to you. Thank you very much. I will get back to you. I want to review it. I kind of want to, talk to somebody. Why is that important?
Well, I think it shows that you have good judgment. As the applicant, you're not just jumping, you're not needy, you're thoughtful. Mm. You take things into consideration. You also don't want to leave money on the table, right?
Tell me more about this money on the table, because I think people want to know what is that about?
Right.
I don't want to leave money on the table.
No. First of all, I think as hospitality professionals, it's been my experience that we're terrible at negotiating on our own behalf. We're people pleasers. We say, sure, we take a little less or we do a little more. It's what we do, right? So when it comes to negotiating on our own behalf, we're not great at it. Here's an example. So I had this fellow that was going on a job interview and he's probably in his mid-40s. And, sometimes I get the feeling that, they don't want to check in with me. They want to just handle business. They're on their own. They know how to do this. Okay, fine. Well, the employer had told me, we're pretty comfortable going to 115 for a base salary and I can throw in a car. Okay, well, that's nice. So my approach to, helping people find the right fit is I take the airline's approach. So if United says we're going to land at 3:00, and we land at 2:45, everybody's happy, right? So I try not to be cavalier with what the employer has told me they will pay. So I didn't say that, you know, hey, they can pay 115. I told them a range, 105 to 115. I didn't mention the car because I feel like if I just hold on to that trump card and we need to throw the car in at the end, okay. That was already being spoken about anyway, right? It's not over and beyond what the employer was talking about. So the guy goes ahead, you know, gets the offer, doesn't tell me, accepts. It's all done. And he ended up with $108,000 and no car. And I'm thinking, you left money on the table, pal. You know, because...
Now, did you tell him?
No.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't want him to feel like he didn't get a good deal. And okay. I don't want him to lose face. He's 45 years old, mm-hmm. you know, if he felt like that was what he wanted to accept. I mean, I live with that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to sour the deal, mm-hmm. but I can see the merit in checking in with the recruiter.
I see.
You know, or if you're doing a deal on your own, you know, check in with some colleagues. Or does your brother-in-law's sister work at XYZ company and this is what they're paying? I mean, I don't know, but. I think it's good to be thoughtful and considerate and not jump at things, mm-hmm. right? And you want things in writing. You want to be able to go back and look at your contract, right? It's a contract. Right. This is what we're offering you. Mm-hmm. So if after 66 days you're still not on the employee health insurance, you know, program and they said that you'd be onboarded day 31, you have something that you can go back to them and say, look, mm-hmm. what happened here? Right. So that's why I think it's important.
Okay. And so what other examples are there of leaving money on the table, especially if you don't, you know, either talk to a recruiter or talk to a friend, kind of ask around, you know, what other examples do you see in terms of that?
Here's an idea. Say you really wanted $90,000 a year, right? And I told you as the recruiter, look, they'll go up to 90. They're comfortable with that. You know, the range is, you know, 85 to 90. And you get your written offer and it comes in at 85, right? Well, you can totally counter offer. You don't have to accept 85. And that might not be where they will end up, right? But that's their first offer. It's kind of like playing poker, right? Now, some companies might think, if they just take 85 and they didn't counter offer, maybe when the vendor comes by, they're going to take the first price on tomatoes, right? Mm. So by actually coming back with a counter offer can look like you have confidence and that you understand the business side of how an operation works, right? And functions. It might look better to them that you counter offered, right? They can always say no, that's our best offer. And perhaps you would say to them, okay, I'll accept 85. Would you consider a salary review in 90 days? They might say, we'll consider a salary review in 6 months. But, you know, there's an art to negotiating, mm-hmm. right?
Now, should all that be written somewhere? Or how does that kind of
proceed? Ideally, okay. Because, you know, what if the guy that hired you isn't there after 5 months, you know, and he made you this verbal promise? What do you have to go on? Mm-hmm. Nothing. You're kind of out of luck, right? So that's an example of why I would want things in writing for sure.
Mm-hmm. What exactly, you know, in terms of other examples of, you know, the leaving money on the table where it's kind of going into the benefits arena.
Right.
Where if it's, you know, is it time off? Is it not using the company's insurance, medical insurance?
Right.
What other things do you see out there that may be a perk to some a candidate that, you know, that is looking to kind of up their take home,
right?
You know, rather than just leaving money on the table.
Yeah. So that's a really good point. I think it's important to really understand the benefits program and what types of perks you get. So it could be, you know, in San Francisco, they pay your parking. Well, heck, that can be $36 a day. With after-tax dollars, you probably have to earn close to 50 to pay tax on to net 36 to pay your parking. I mean, so if they pay your parking, that's kind of saving you $50 a day, right? So that's a big one. Maybe they pay health insurance for your whole family. Well, if you have three children, that could be significant, right? I think it's more important to think about what you get to keep opposed to, you know, what's the number of that base salary, right? I mean, do you really understand your tax bracket and how that works? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
I know we don't offer tax advice here.
Yeah, right,
but,
right.
But that's something that a candidate should
really understand look at. Right. I mean, I'm seeing something new trending in the industry, which is, let's take the example of $90,000 a year as a base salary. Some employers are offering these other, we'll call them buckets. Maybe they're $5,000 for travel, $5,000 for research and development. Now, those, you have access to those funds on an annual basis, and you don't have to pay tax on them. So if that were just $10,000 more in salary, you'd be taxed on that. And so would the employer. They would have to pay FICA. So it costs them more to offer you that $10,000 extra in salary than it does to give you a couple of buckets of research and development, travel. You know, normally you just submit some documentation. You went to a restaurant or you flew to this other place to check out some other, industry trends or what have you. I mean, the reality is that becomes your family vacation. We all know that, mm-hmm. right? But it's not like it's illegal. It's just a way that the business can help you and you're able to retain more of the benefit of that money than just being straight up in your paycheck, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's another thing. You know, people get really excited. Oh, I'm eligible for a $10,000 bonus. Well, I can tell you from my own experience that at the end of the year, when you get a $10,000 bonus, $4,500 goes to tax. So, you know, it's kind of the womp, 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 right. You know? So just being smart about how you're compensated and to be informed produces better results.
Mm-hmm. What occurs after? Well, let's just go back a little bit. So if once the offer is made by the employer, and then say you come back with a counteroffer, is there a limitation in terms of how many times these negotiations go back and forth? Does the employer just say, oh, forget it, I'm going to see somebody else? Is there a certain way you need to handle yourself to make those counteroffers?
That's a good question. I mean, I think certainly there comes a point where it's ridiculous, right? I mean, I would say you probably your strongest play is that first counteroffer.
Okay.
There you go. And the employer is either going to engage or not, right? Mm. If they're giving you everything you asked for, you can't go back to them and ask for more on top of that. I mean, that's just greedy, you know? That's not going to work. So I think you have one shot, right, to go back and ask for something else.
But it is good to take the time
100%.
To say yes or no or the counteroffer.
100%. And usually you have, 3 days to accept. Some places give you a week. It kind of depends on the business, but they'll say this offer is good until, and there's a date, right? So they want you to go talk to your family. They don't want to make a bad hire, right?
Right.
I mean, it's a colossal pain in the butt for them, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, they're going to invest a lot of dollars in training. You know, they're going to suspend any searches they're doing and lose traction if you're not the right hire. So they really want to get it right.
Mm-hmm. What have you seen in terms of just pitfalls that you see that both sides do? Is there anything that comes to mind where, you know, hear about, this is the offer that I would like to give this candidate, and all of a sudden you get something off the wall or, you know, just...
Sure.
What have you heard?
So the first thing that comes to mind for me is employers are taking too long to get to the written offer, right? right now, the candidates have a lot of choices. It's like the real estate market. There's often, you know, one part of the equation has more power than the other, whether it's the buyer or the seller. In our industry, the hospitality industry, there's applicants and there's clients. And right now, the applicants have all the power. So they've probably looking at two or three jobs, right? And getting close on an offer. So if someone's dragging their heels to get the applicant an offer, they can lose someone good just by not getting it together, you know? So I really try to encourage the employers to, you know, if you liked someone, act swiftly.
That's great. Is there anything else about the offer that, you know, was it financial? Is it anything else? Is it benefits? Is there anything else part of the offer that, you know, you should question or you, you know, bring up if it's not on the offer that we haven't discussed yet?
Some employers are doing background checks.
Okay.
I rarely see a hurdle with that. You know, before marijuana became legal in California, a few employers were doing drug checks. And, you know, I hit a couple of, you know, hurdles with that. Mm-hmm. And some things actually spun apart. But, you know, that's not prevalent or relevant anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes there's a credit check. I wouldn't say that that's even 20% mm-hmm. of the time, but you know, sometimes there's a background check. So mm-hmm. if you have something going on, you know, just be cognizant of that, mm-hmm. that you may be asked to go through a background check. Mm-hmm. And usually they check 7 years criminal activity, do a social security trace, driver's license, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. But again, it depends on the position you're going after.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's the all about the offer, then this is a good start in terms of trying to figure out, you know, what kind of direction you want to go in counter offering. So I think everybody should be aware of how to go about doing this. The bottom line is don't just say yes or no right off the bat.
Right.
Kind of do your research, right? Is that
right? Yeah. That's the takeaway. And I think we all need practice in looking someone in the eye and smiling and, you know, speaking our truth mm-hmm. and not getting nervous and just jumping the gun too quickly. Mm-hmm. So being thoughtful and considerate, and it's okay to press pause.
You have been listening to Hospitality Help with Cindy Race. Cindy is the sole proprietor of Foley & Fitzgerald, a premier boutique hospitality recruiting and placement agency based in the San Francisco Bay Area since 1995. For more information, please visit foleyandfitzgerald.com or follow on Facebook at Foley & Fitzgerald.